So this is an idea I had for a show a long time ago. I actually started having this idea back when I was a fucking teenager. And I think it was just like, so you'll notice all these songs are kind of from that era, from 10 or 15 years ago. But it was like a different time when you'd go buy an album, you couldn't get shit on the internet. So you only had so much music, so you really put a lot of time into whatever bands you had.
You did your research.
Yeah, and like I would listen to things over and over. Nowadays, I'm like, as soon as I get bored of something, I'm like, fuck this, whatever, delete, download something else, who cares? But, you know, back then, you'd really just fucking delve into albums and get to know every fucking little song and every little thing.
Well, music's become more background noise now that we're older.
Yeah, it really has.
It's just something you put on and let go, whatever. Now you go hunting for the right song.
And I started noticing back then just, like, a surprising number of the bands I listened to back then. You could make the argument that, well, at least for me, like, the very first song on their very first album was, it's hard to say, like, what my favorite song is by most bands, but is it, like, the first song was a contender. It definitely was, like, was potentially my favorite one.
Basically, you figure the band started strong and just went downhill from there?
Yeah, and it really was true with some bands, and with other bands, it's, like, not so cut and dried. But I made a little list, so obviously these are just my opinions that these particular songs are super great, but I know that that you're familiar with all these bands, so maybe we'll come up with bullshit to talk about. Well, actually, let's start with Pearl Jam, because I think Pearl Jam is the first time I noticed that phenomenon.
Okay.
Because I remember...
What song was the first track?
It was Once on 10, and actually the first time I heard Pearl Jam or that album, I got it from you. I just I borrowed your cassette.
Yeah,
of
I bought it.
It
in Boston.
Right, and it actually was so much so that that was actually the only song I liked at first, and then I sort of was like, fucking Alive is pretty good, and slowly I got into the whole thing.
Slowly got into the rest of the album. Yeah, but that was back during your whole Weird Al Yankovic days.
Yeah, pretty much. I went Weird Al, I loved, and then I started getting into Guns N' Roses. And then I got into everything from there. But that was it at the time.
See, I think Pearl Jam was one of the first albums that I purchased myself that I would listen to both sides all the way through. And that was the weird thing about audio cassettes at the time is if you didn't like a song on a tape, you had to remember when to flip it.
Yeah.
So that you didn't have to listen. You could listen to all the good songs and just stay away from the bad ones.
I remember fucking that Marilyn Manson Smells Like Children, is that what it was called?
Yep.
The one with the EP. It had some just weird shit, like there was like a 4-minute long answering machine message of him talking to his mom and just shit that I couldn't give a fuck about. So I actually dubbed other Marilyn Manson songs onto my cassette, even though it was the original tape. I had to be real careful to find something that was long enough.
It was exactly 4 minutes long.
Yeah, because I was tired of fast forwarding it all the time. So yeah, you had to do things like that back in the day.
But yeah, I remember that Pearl Jam 10 was the first album that I could sit down and listen to the whole thing without having to hit fast forward or rewind.
I was always a little surprised with it because when I first heard about it, I was up on Campobello where a bunch of our relatives live. It's just this little island that's separated from Canada.
So, by the States.
Yeah, you need to take a bridge into Lubeck, cross the border just to get there. And they were talking about it like, it's just like that kind of, because they're all sort of like, I don't know, car mechanic-y type folk, you know, work with their hands, you know, down to earth. And there's like always these certain bands that those
that they get a hold of before us. They got me into Tool.
Oh yeah?
Oh yeah. But Campobello totally got me into Tool, which is really weird.
And I'm thinking it's like bands like AC/DC or when Rammstein first came out, like that's just those types of bands just get super adopted by that type of folk. But I was surprised that Pearl Jam was one of them because I distinctly remember one of our cousins just being like, man, Pearl Jam is like the only band putting out good music these days. But there were a lot of mellow songs on 10.
Who would that have been?
It was probably not JD, so it must have been Steven, I guess.
Yeah, well, Steven I could picture because, I don't know, it just seems, Pearl Jam seems like Steven's sort of band.
Right.
And he was still playing guitar a lot back then.
But then I remember when JD came to visit, he was really into Pearl Jam and Nirvana, and I wasn't really into either of them yet. Like,
I was huge into Nirvana. We don't even want to go there.
Yeah, well, we will. We'll get into that when I get to that.
All right, so basically, yeah, after 10 came out, and I wouldn't agree with you that Once was probably, like, their best song. I still have a soft spot for Jeremy and Alive.
And, well, I remember even songs like Black. I didn't like Black for years, till years later.
Well, Black, there's something about, but it it grew on me over the years.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's same with me. Actually, there's a funny story about Black where fucking the record label really wanted to release it as a single. They were sure it'd be a big hit, but it's like all personal to Eddie and it's about some shit that's important. Yeah. And apparently one time, Eddie Vedder, around that time, you know, the early 90s, he was hiking through some woods at some, you know, national park somewhere, and this group of, like, teenage hikers were singing Black. So, and all of a sudden, Eddie Vedder comes out of the woods and asks them not to sing that song because it's, like, personal to him and meaningful, and then he just goes back in the woods, and they're like, what the fuck? I don't know if that's true, but that's the story I heard.
No, so basically, yeah, after that album came out, I really didn't like anything else Pearl Jam's done. I don't know why. I liked Daughter, the big single off of Versus, and yeah, I hated that album.
I stuck with them for a while, like the second album, the third album, even the fourth album when everyone else jumped ship. I still liked it. And yeah, I don't know. Just eventually there's just too much Pearl Jam. It's going nowhere. It's like...
I don't know. It just really didn't strike the same chord that the first album did. It's the same thing I figure with most bands is they get money, they get famous, and then they turn into assholes.
Yeah. Or even with Pearl Jam, they were trying to be nice, but it just made them seem like douches, like, well, trying to fight Ticketmaster and stuff, and it's like, who gives a fuck?
What was the other... the big thing with Pearl Jam is the whole, we refuse to put out music videos. You fucking idiots. So even, like, if they had good music... How are you gonna know? I'm not gonna go out and buy the album. Like, back when Versus came out, I wasn't gonna buy the album.
That was another thing, is that they were such a big band that when Versus came out, MTV, is the only time they ever did this, made their own video for Animal or Go or whatever the first single was. Yeah, it was just like live footage, but they cut together a video because they're like, we gotta play Pearl Jam, fuck them. If they're not gonna make a video, we'll make a fucking video.
No, because I remember, like, I didn't listen to Versus for like 4 months after it came out, and then someone was just like, here, listen to the ARP. I was in a band, that's what it was. And the boys were like, we should play Daughter down in St. John. And I was like, Daughter by who? Pearl Jam. Never heard of it. And they're like, you fucking kidding me.
One of the biggest selling albums of all time, sir.
Yeah, like, but whatever. And fucking, I'd never heard, well, that was back during I was listening to fucking a whole shitload of punk, and everybody else was listening to whatever the fuck they wanted. Alright, so
Once by Pearl Jam was at one point my favorite Pearl Jam song. I still really fucking like it. We'll be right back. So since we brought up Nirvana, let's do Nirvana next. Nirvana was a slow burn for me. Well, the first song on their first album on Bleach was called Blue. And the little story from that is they already had their guitars tuned really low and they didn't realize, so they tuned them another octave lower. And that's why it's all...
See, I'm not too familiar with Bleach. I know that I listened to it a bunch, but that was back... I didn't actually listen to Bleach until I started doing drugs.
Right.
Like, and I'm talking, like, I'm the hallucinogenics. Like, yes, I smoked a lot of pot, and I listened to a lot of Nirvana, but I didn't listen to Bleach until I was into my acid head days. So the only song that I really remember off of Bleach was,
Well, About a Girl got famous later from the Unplugged.
Yeah, it wasn't About a Girl. It was...
What was the single?
Love Buzz.
Love Buzz, yeah.
Love Buzz was awesome, and the rest of the album just sort of...
Let's sit for a moment before we get some coffee.
Just sort of, you know, faded by.
Love Buzz, it's a cover by band that does, I'm your Venus, I'm your fire.
They did Love Buzz first?
Yeah.
I knew it was a cover, I just didn't know who did it originally.
Because apparently it was Chris Novoselic wanted to do that as a cover for some reason, just had it stuck in his head. And Kurt was like, all right, fine. And then the record label chose it as a single because it, I don't know, they thought
it's
maybe
an
it was...
Well, I could see why Chris would want to do it because it has an amazing bass line. But yeah. Blue?
Something about that song that always stuck out to me. But again, this is like, it would be a silly argument that that's the best Nirvana song. Obviously, it's fucking not, but...
Well, the thing is with Nirvana, you really can't say what, like, technically... All the songs were shit. Like, they weren't that hard to learn. They weren't that hard to play. The only problem was, is I don't think there's been a vocalist who can raspy scream like Kurt Cobain since.
Yeah, the way Dave Grohl described it was, it sounds like he's boiling nails
in his throat. Like,
But that was another one where our cousin JD was really into Pearl Jam and really into Nirvana, and he's the one who first gave me a mixtape that had a bunch of songs from... Nevermind on it, and I just, at the time, I was a little bit before I really got into music, and I just wasn't into it. I don't know. And I kind of feel like history vindicated me on Nirvana, because then once In Utero came out, I loved that, and going back to Bleach, I really liked that shit. Though the album that doesn't fit, which one of these is not like the others,
like Nevermind?
Is Nevermind, because it's like a fucking candy-coated version of Nirvana. It's still really catchy, but it's not right. It's not what Nirvana is.
See, first song I heard, of course, Smells Like Teen Spirit, just like every other fucking person in North America of my age.
You know, though, I mean, like we said, I was really into Weird Al for when my youth.
You probably heard Smells Like Nirvana
first. I love Smells Like Nirvana, because if you listen to them back to back, Weird Al sped it up and cleaned it up a little, and it holds together, and I don't know, his version, I think, is just catchier.
See, I remember I was trying to get Tim Shriver. I don't know whether you know him.
I don't think so.
Dude from Marysville. I was like, dude, have you ever heard this band? I don't know whether the band's called Smells Like Teen Spirit or whether the band's called Nirvana, but here's the first track. And he looked at me like I had two fucking heads. Like, why are you making me listen to this shit? He also didn't like Faith No More.
Man, that's blasphemy.
But,
that's
fucking, you know, insane. He grew into them. But yeah, I remember the first time I ever fucking heard them was on Much Music, and I was like, I don't know, just blew my fucking mind. Who are these guys?
See, maybe that's the problem. Since I only got into music, like, obviously the whole sort of grunge alternative thing, it was like a rebellion against hair metal and shit, but I was never really into that stuff.
I was. It was great.
So maybe that's why Smells Like Teen Spirit didn't seem significant to me, because, I mean, I still, anytime I did get into that shit, it was stuff I liked, like Dr. Feelgood or Kickstart My Heart. I was like, that shit's cool, but I never...
Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah, but I was never really into it.
Now, so, like, I remember I wandered around fucking junior high school listening to Poison and fucking Warrant and all that shit, and Nirvana hit, and that was pretty much the end of it. Yeah, we're getting a little bit of drizzle, but nothing.
A little rain, yeah. Yeah, well, like, because, like, I remember with In Utero, me and my friend Tim back in high school, or junior high, I mean, I don't know, like, Heart-Shaped Box, I was like, that's fucking awesome. And then I got the album, and it was even rougher than Heart-Shaped Box. Heart-Shaped Box was kind of...
It was the polished song.
Yeah, it and All Apologies, they remixed to make them a little radio-friendly. But I loved all that weird, junky-sounding shit in Utero. But my friend Tim was like, what the fuck? This sucks. Which is what most of the world thought, because it didn't sound
I
like Nevermind. Yeah. To me, that was more Nirvana to me. Was that
my
rough
major,
shit.
My problem with fucking In Utero is I got shipped off to St. Andrews that year. So I couldn't buy albums. And I Nobody I knew down there listened to anything good. Everyone just sort of listened to fucking bullshit. Although I did meet a kid who introduced me to Dinosaur Jr. Even though I'd heard them before, he had a whole collection, so I got to listen to them.
I've still never heard that band much. The bit I've heard, I kind of like, but...
Eh, it's a 50-50. They played here a little while ago.
Really?
And I didn't get to go see them. I was sort of pissed off. But hey, whatever.
This is Blue, B-L-E-W, from Bleach, the first Nirvana. Yeah. Yeah, bleh.
There you go.
Yeah. And this was one of my favorite Nirvana songs ever. So from around that same time, just like 95 this was, but Silverchair, I still think their first song and their first album was the best, but their whole first album, still to this day, I think is amazing.
Okay,
it's fucking awesome.
And you say it's Israel Sun.
Yeah.
I thought Israel Sun was further along on the album, but I'll go with you on it. And yeah, I have to say that that is my favorite Silverchair song of all fucking time.
And like, I kind of kept up a bit with their other albums and their later stuff, but they never seemed as like... I don't know, it's hard to explain that first Silverchair, Frog Stomp, because it's not, like, revolutionary. It's just verse, chorus, verse, fucking basic shit.
But it
it's
was a bunch
so
of
good.
14, 15-year-olds who wrote it.
Yeah, they were really young. And I just remember when Adam and Caroline first bought that shitty-looking house down the street
okay.
and were fixing it up. I remember listening to that album while... Or maybe I was helping them paint, and, like, I think it was Chad Bailey, the kid who used to live next door to us, who became a fucking crazy drug addict. I think he introduced it to me. He's like, have you heard this fucking band from Australia? They're like, they're our age. They're kids, and they're fucking excellent. And even though that album is not, like, breaking any new molds, I really think just writing an album that's catchy from start to end is really hard to do. Because if it wasn't, everybody would do it.
Well, here's the thing. I remember reading that the first album was a total collaboration between all three members of the band. And then the second album was... mostly done by Daniel Johns, and then the third album, when they got off their big world tour deal, the other two, like the bass player, I'm something Giles and something or other. I can't remember their names. But they went on vacation, which is understandable. And Daniel Johns apparently went right back into the studio. And in the first 2 weeks home, he had the third album fucking written all himself. And he was already layering fucking tracks onto it.
And see, that's where I fell off as far as albums go. Like, I know some of their songs here and there, but...
Yeah. And like, I've listened to all three albums all the way through, but none of them held your interest the way that Frog Stomp did.
And I guess their new shit, like, they're up to 4 or 5 albums now, and it's a lot of symphonic shit. And I heard it's pretty good, I just haven't gotten into it.
They broke up for a while, and I don't know where everybody went, but I've seen pictures of them. Like, you remember their videos, and there's this fresh-faced little blonde kid screaming his ass off.
Who was kind of like Kurt Cobain. Yeah. Looked just like him.
And I remember seeing the videos, and... I was actually talking to Ray, and I was like, remember fucking Silverchair? And he's like, yeah, they're back together. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, they're back together. And so I checked online, and Daniel Johns looks like an old beat-up fucking bastard now. Like,
he's just, like, really, like, sickly all the time. Like, he's just a frail person, like, real easy to catch things and just, you know.
Well, he looks all hired ass. Oh, yeah? He looks like a fucking inmate is what he looks like. Like, if you ever get a chance, dude, do a search for Daniel Johns photos, and he looks fucking just dirty.
I always thought it was cool, too, that since they were just, like, kids, they were into the same bands we were into. Like, Daniel Johns used to always have a Korn sticker on his guitar, and I just thought it was so cool that a kid in a band admitted that he liked this other band, you know? Like, that just didn't happen that often.
Well, here's the thing. I seriously think that after you hit about 23, 24, you start to just sort of fall out of fucking, you know, out of the musical loop. Because I've noticed that with myself. Like, people tell me about these bands all the time, and I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? What?
Actually, who was I talking to about this? Maybe it was Matt. That, we're totally noticing that. It's, like, hard to give a shit about the newer stuff. What I've noticed about, man, indie rock these days that drives me nuts is I was just listening to this band called Snow Patrol that's all famous. I only listened to it once, but...
I hate them.
I'm tired of people that don't sing. Remember when Chris Cornell would just be like, "Yow!"
Yeah.
But everyone just talks their way through their fucking, "Help me out, yeah, yes." Fuck you. Well, sing, asshole. You know?
Well, that's, like, early... I'd say, like, early 70s they did that in music.
Well, that's actually how Mike Patton, I saw an old interview with him, Angel Dust era, that cracked me up, where they were like, "So what bands you into these days?" And he's like, "What's even out these days?" And they're like, "I don't know, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden." And he's like, "It's just the 70s again." He's kind of got a point, but I'm into all that shit.
Well, actually, did you hear, the last time I saw Mike Patton, he was...
Was this the Wolf Mother thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really famous on YouTube. And he's like, fuck this band.
He's like, holy shit. Who is this Wolf Mother? What is it, 1970? Fuck on!
Yeah, and like all of these things on YouTube, people are like, "Who's just jealous?" But go back and find that old Angel Dust interview. He was always hated that shit. He's not just doing that now.
Well, fuck. Anyway.
But I like that shit. So,
back to Silverchair. No, Israel Sun is probably the fucking hardest song on the album. I don't know. That's another reason I don't think it was the first song on the album. You're going to have to prove this to me.
But we're gonna dig it up. Yeah, it totally was, though,
because it's completely like
that's the other thing with the olden days. Ian said once that she thought this was quaint about me, that I'll know which album things are on and what the track number was. Like, for instance, I do remember that song Pure Massacre. Yeah, it was track 7 on that album. But like, I know all that shit from that era. But that was just funny because I saw an interview on Much Music where I would call that song Pure Massacre, and he was being interviewed by some French chick who's like, "Can you tell me the story behind Pure Massacre?" And he's like, "Well, the song Pure Massacre." Like, everyone said it different. I just thought that was funny.
Well, it's different accents. You just named 3 different accents.
But like, that was the best song ever for that to happen. Like, oh, it's just
fucked
great.
Up. No, that whole album, I seriously think...
I think it's worth a listen. It's worth going back to.
It should be put on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And, yeah, if you ever want to listen to anything else by them, don't.
Well, that's a thing, too, that's, like, unique to music, kind of. Maybe not, but music seems like the thing where you have your genius brilliance young and you get worse as you get older. Whereas you're a physicist or something, you probably figure out your best shit when you're 50.
All depends. There are bands that I think they've put out shit in the past. Well, like Pantera, as we were saying earlier. Their first album, if you ever get a chance to listen to it, was a glam metal piece of shit. But real funny, if you sit there and you look at their older stuff, where Phil Alonso looks like he could chew your head off, and Dimebag
that guy's
looks
boiling
like,
fucking nails in his throat. Oh, that dude's crazy these days.
But anyway, yeah, their first album, they've got the fucking prissy hair and the makeup on. It was really funny.
I was going to say, though, what I was going to say about so the new shit lets you down, or you just don't care, but then the old stuff just doesn't hold up. Like, have you heard this new Alice in Chains single yet? I don't mind the new singer, but it just sucks. I don't know. I'm just not into it. It's, like, lame.
I don't know. I also... What was AIC's? Did you throw that on there? Are they on the list?
No, because I don't remember what their first song was on Facelift, but nothing on Facelift was their best song. It was an okay album, but...
I don't know, man. Man in the Box.
Man in the Box was good, but that was the second song.
Was it?
I think it was... Shit. What the fuck was the first song? I don't remember anymore.
We Die Young? No. Nope.
Maybe. It might have been.
Because that was a good tune, too. Really shitty
Scary's
video.
Gary's
on the wall.
Is that that song? Because that's what it was.
Gary's on it. Yeah, do you know how they did half that video?
Oh,
they just threw fucking saran wrap over top of a swimming pool and had people come up under it.
They were a band that looked really glammy when they started, too.
Oh, they were fucking funny.
Cool. So, fucking Israel Sun, Silverchair. 90% sure it was the first song on their first album.
90%, he says.
If I had a fucking iPhone, I could look
it up. I think it was track 9, goddammit.
Well, that's one thing I learned early on, is like, if you're of the disposition where you're going to be a nerd anyway, because you can't help but remember useless shit, the music nerds are at least the cool nerds. So go for that. So I tried to.
Dude, here's a trivia question for you. Mm-hmm. What's the make and model of the pistol that Megatron transformed into?
Shit, I don't know.
Walter P-38.
And the kids these days are like, he turned into a gun?
He turned into a gun? was their first track?
Well, before we get to that, what something else that just made me think of. Let's keep wandering head to fucking Dull Timmy's. This one doesn't fit as well with my first song thing, but I'm just thinking of bands talking about how much they like other bands. Like Korn and the Deftones were always like connected.
Oh, they fucking loved each other.
Was always cool. They'd kind of
fucking awesome.
Be on each other's shit and like always bring each other on tour. And
Limp Bizkit, Korn.
Yeah, but with Deftones, this one is a pretty tenuous, but Bored was the first song on the first album, and I don't know if it was, like, for a while, my favorite Deftones song. So I think that fits on the show. Why not?
That, I don't know, Seven Words.
Yeah, Seven Words was awesome, too. I just like the build of Bored, and then it just, once he lets loose, that's just so fucking cool. I don't know, just something I always liked about that, maybe as just that period of my life of just being a fucking slacker teenager, just, like, doing a whole song about how you're fucking bored.
I remember
nice.
The first time I got that album, I was going to Quake School.
Right. Which, for those not in the know,
I paid $10,000 to go and play Quake at school.
What were you supposed to be learning?
Like, I was supposed to be learning web development, and here's the thing. I was learning web development until halfway through my course, Microsoft and Netscape both released HTML editors, which is what my course curriculum was. So I got halfway through my school year, and bam, I don't have to know how to do HTML anymore because it's all right at the click of a button. Yeah, people used to have to use Notepad to make web pages, you fucking little bastards.
Although you did get awful good at Quake.
I got way too good at Quake.
Which that makes me think I'm not going to play it, but Quake makes me always think of Trent Reznor. And Head Like a Hole was a pretty fucking good song for a first
song
and a first album.
That was a really fucking wicked album.
But Nine Inch Nails is so consistently awesome for fucking 15 years that I just...
I can't say that was my favorite song. My favorite song on that album had to be Something I Can Never Have.
Yeah.
Which is weird because it's so fucking mellow and... Meh. Anyway, we were talking about Deftones.
Yeah.
Anyway, I bought the second Korn album, and I bought the first Deftones album the same day. It was during lunch. I was at Quake School, and I went back to Quake School and listened to that shit while I was programming all day. I wouldn't really call it programming. Web development.
Right.
And that whole fucking album blew me away, because I'd heard about them. I'd never heard any of their music, but it was an interview with John Davis, and they were saying that, yeah, we're on tour with the Deftones, they're awesome, buy their album. So I went out and did it. And it got to be a point for a while there where I would listen to the Deftones more than I listened to Korn, which was really weird considering I had the Adidas pants and the fucking, you know, Korn t-shirt, and fucking I lived and breathed that fucking band for so long.
But yeah, especially those first two Deftones albums, they were fucking awesome, because I think I heard them both through you, and yeah, I was really into them too. They were good. And it's like a weird band. It's hard to categorize Deftones. They don't really sound like anybody else, and especially for those first two albums, they were kind of simplistic kind of, compared to like the Korn and Biscuit style, where everybody was getting into the millions of strings on your bass and some hip-hoppy shit. Deftones is pretty straightforward.
I always called, when people would ask me about Deftones and the difference between Deftones and the other bands of the era, I always said that the Deftones were the thinking man's rap rock.
Right.
And then people look at me like, yeah, right. I'm like, no, really. In comparison to everyone else, these guys seem to, like, you know, put a little work into it.
Yeah, Deftones is never going to do a song of, I hate writing shit, it is so stupid, what's my problem today? That should have been an outtake, like, come on.
But, like, your albums after fucking Around the Fur just sort of went straight to fucking hell in a handbasket.
I was still into White Pony, but I could totally see why you would not be. And then after that, yeah, I lost the thread too.
Like, although, just for everybody's information, there was a documentary done about the Deftones and called Entertain Us, I think it was. And it's never going to be released because it was apparently too depressing. Do a search on YouTube, anyone who's listening, for it. The trailer's out there, and Maverick Records, fuck Madonna, will not release it.
I remember I was kind of depressed when I first heard that Chino was all drugged out, and I was like, well, it kind of makes sense. Maybe that's why the albums aren't holding together, but it just sucks when you hear that about anybody.
I don't think he was all drugged out. I think he was just really drunk. So the same with John Davis.
Yeah.
John Davis had just He had a depression problem, and he was a huge alcoholic. He wasn't into everything else as bad as everyone thinks.
Well, I always remember hearing with, like, Korn, it's like, no one, like, their whole thing was kind of being, where it was like, metal before them was way more about, like, let's be tough, and they were more like, let's admit that the world is kicking the shit out of us.
We're fucking, yeah, let's admit that, you know, I've been molested. Let's admit that fucking everyone at school used to kick the shit out of me.
Right, and that kind of thing just lost its sincerity once you hear, like, I remember after Follow the Leader, I started hearing these stories of, like, yeah, we got stripper poles in our house, and shit, and it's just like, and they just became fat, lazy rock stars.
They became frat boys.
Yeah.
Professional frat boys. And that happens to none. I think that's part of the reason why all these bands come out with the first album, and their first album is the fucking, the bomb, right? And then they can never write anything good ever again. I mean, fucking, yeah, the whole fucking crew of them.
Yeah. Speaking of professional frat boys, we should talk about Limp Bizkit next after we grab some fucking food.
We're going to get some coffee, and then we'll come back to Fred Durst, the number one frat boy in North America, whether he likes to admit it or not.
So this is Bored by the Deftones.
Classic!
I think this is going to be a good show. This is interesting, this shit, to me. All these bands.
It might interest you, but everyone else might go, what the fuck?
Into gold.
So that's one weird thing, is we were trying to think of other bands that fit this criteria, and Dan did come up with one, but it's tough. I think a lot of it is just, I don't know if it's just that era, the mid-90s type thing, or maybe it's just that was when I was paying most attention
to music.
So wow. That's why I can come up with more from that time, because everything seems to fall in that sort of place. So the next thing we were going to talk about with the frat boy-ness is
Fred Durst.
Fred Durst. I always thought that band got way too much
commercialized.
Shit. Well, that too, but just like when people say they don't like Limp Bizkit anymore, I'm like, fuck you. Everyone used to love them. Don't pretend you didn't. You
Everybody know? Did. They were like world fucking famous.
Yeah.
World famous.
And like when you first heard Faith, you know, because we heard it before it became a big phenomenon, it was hilarious, man. Like, that song cracked my shit up. It was like, that's awesome. That is the best thing I ever heard.
Well,
and that whole album was fucking great.
Just for everyone out there, I have one tattoo on my body. One. And it's a Limp Bizkit tattoo. It's supposed to be a Limp Bizkit tattoo. And it was the album cover from $3 Bill, y'all.
Yeah, which was such a good album.
But it's been fucking 20 some odd years, and now it looks like a big black dick on my arm. Aha, have your laugh, fuck off.
But I do remember, like, when we first heard them, it was like not a well-known thing. It was kind of like just this cool band that we were listening to. And then when Faith came out and was a big success,
it blew up and everybody fucking loved Limp Bizkit.
And I was happy for them. I was like, cool. Like, but then I remember when I knew things were kind of going wrong was Nookie came out. Everybody loved it. It was super cool. And that album was about to come out. And it came out, debuted at number one, sold a bunch. But their record label said it didn't sell as much as they expected. And that's when I knew, like, this is just like getting into corporate territory. You know, it's not this cool band anymore. And then by that third album...
Did you hear how they got heard?
Well, I heard lots of stuff about, like, basically Fred Durst, like, busting his balls to make their band well-known.
He did, They got their big break because...
Oh, he was like a tattoo artist, right?
Korn was playing in Florida, and they, like, I guess Head got some fucking shitty tattoo by Fred Durst on him. And Head... to this day apparently says, yeah, it's the wackest tattoo I've got. It's a piece of shit, but whatever. But like, I don't know, people shit on Limp Bizkit all the time. I'd say, okay, the order went $3 Bill, Significant Other, and then it went to Hot Dog, didn't it?
Yeah.
Hot Dog, I could give a rat's ass about. That album fucking blew chunks.
Yeah, it was pretty gay. And, like, they released those two singles at once, My Generation and Roland. And I remember me and my friend Matt, because they played them, like, debuting the two Limp Bizkit new singles back to back. We thought they were, like, joke singles. We're like, so they're going to release the real one tomorrow, right? You know, like, what
my
the fuck?
Generation.
Because we don't give a fuck. And we, like, it got, and like, Roland, you'd hear Roland in dance clubs. It got so popular.
Oh, yeah. And then they came out with Results May Vary, and I loved that fucking album. But by that time, Hot Dog had fucking killed
everything.
Biscuit.
Yeah, and it took a while for me to get into Results May Vary, but I agree. In the end, I ended up liking it a lot. It had some really good songs.
Actually, I'd have to say that it's a toss-up between that. I think I like that more than I like Significant Other. I really have to say that I love that fucking album. And The Truth... The triumphant return of West Borland.
I loved that.
I think it's fucking amazing. However, nobody gives a fuck anymore.
I really think if you just took that first Limp Bizkit album and The Truth, because they kind of seem similar to me. It's sort of weird and messy and fast rapping and crazy shit. And it would just be a different band. And then, but if you give people Hot Dog Flavor Water, like, yeah, it's like two different bands. It's not even the same. This is fucking weird.
Like, I don't know, man. I watched an interview, actually, with Corey Taylor from Slipknot. And he said, we are artists, we are musicians. And then he went on to say that Fred Durst was a fucking asshole and was not an artist and was a great businessman, and he wouldn't take anything away from Fred's business skills, which you really fucking can't. But he was not a fucking artist. And... I don't know. I'd have to say Fred fucking did. He made his stamp on fucking music.
And I have heard, like, you know, on that little extra I did for Keith Malley's DVD where Spooky was talking about how one thing a lot of artists don't have is that that will to promote themselves. You know, most people
Fred's got too much of the will to promote.
But I remember back when Faith No More hadn't broken up yet, and Limp Bizkit had just started, and Limp Bizkit was an opening act for Faith No More. And again, I was following Faith No More message boards and shit. Yeah, like back in the day, I guess it was like, what was that called? News groups. And just reading reviews of Faith No More shows and shit, because I had a lot of free time back then. And people hated Limp Bizkit, like just giving them the finger and fuck you. But Fred Durst was always throwing out like 3-song demo cassettes into the crowd, and he would stay after every show and like just pushing the band as hard as he could. And they even got in trouble at the time for like payola shit, where they were paying a radio station to
play shit.
Counterfeit or Pollution or one. I think it was Pollution. Which I think is fucking, I don't know why that's such a big deal, man. Do what you gotta do, you know?
Like, okay. But back to the whole premise
radio,
of...
radio is such bullshit anyway. Like, why not?
Back to the whole premise of first song being the best song. I'm not going to have to agree with you on
I love
Pollution.
It. Pollution is... I love it. I love it so much.
Counterfeit blew my fucking mind the first time I heard it.
But that's the thing is, like, Counterfeit and Sour and, like, so many good songs on that album.
But that whole album was... It's another one that I can listen to front to back and not be disappointed at all.
And I think my favorite part of that album, though, to really break it down, what was that song called? It was track 8, Crunk, I think. Was that the name?
Crunk.
Yeah, well, there's a part where it breaks down and just like...
And it's just DJ Lethal going crazy for like...
But there's this really mellow part where, how do the words even go? Where Fred's just like... I don't know. It's halfway on the tip of my tongue.
Scotch. You need to drop the freaking ego before you crash, before the headlights are simply glaring in your eyes and you're going down. What's the matter with the life that you're leading when you're bleeding? Everyone's thinking how much they hate you. It's not too late, dude, just that time for you to zip up that grill. Take a deep breath, look around, ain't nobody left, just a target. Bullseye, still you walk around like a clown in a force field. See, I'm not crazy, you're the one who's crazy. Institution bound to be the only way that we can even solve this. Had about as much as I can take, so do yourself a favor.
But yeah, I love Pollution, and like, well, I remember this was like the evolution of them to a more mainstream friendly band. As he, in an interview for Significant Other, he was talking about how, talking to fans and touring live and getting the feel for things, that people didn't like songs like Pollution, where he's just
screaming
super fast too, and you can't even tell what he's saying. So he deliberately slowed it down. But I liked that shit.
I was all about that shit. I remember, when I really got into that album and like listened to it daily, I got weaned myself off corn and moved to Limp Bizkit. I would walk to work with my Discman on, and I would walk back from work with my Discman on, and I worked from 12 until 8 a.m. So no one was around, and I just remember fucking screaming out fucking lyrics. And there's like a little hobo fucking village by where the restaurant I used to work at, and I used to walk the back path home. So I'd walk by the hobo village and they'd fucking yell at me every morning to shut up. They told them to fuck off, and I'd call the cops on them. And they threatened me one morning. There was a couple of them with a knife. It was great fun. But I still remember, I don't know, Woodstock. That was the craziest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. I was there.
Were you? Really?
Yeah.
Jeez, how did I not know that?
I don't know.
So that was 99?
98.
Or whatever it was.
Or was it 99? I don't know if I know.
But that one.
I was at 94. I was at both Woodstocks.
Jesus, I didn't know
I wasn't
that.
At the first one. I wasn't even conceived back then. But I was at the second two. And, like, fucking... That was the craziest fucking thing I have ever seen in my life. Was just... I'm amazed that the place didn't explode.
But see, that's one thing with, like...
Like, a whole crowd just spontaneously combust.
And you can... It's easy to criticize Fred Durst for just being a frat boy guy. He was really not that good of a singer. And they used to do a thing in, like, Blender, I think, where they would post excerpts from his live blog shit, his online blog, and make fun of what a dope he is. But as a front man, he's fucking awesome. He's just magnetic. Like, he just works so well in that band.
Although, we have to go back to what we were discussing earlier. Fred Durst doing outside with Aaron Lewis and from Stain.
Yeah.
You just should not be on stage for that song. However.
Yeah, it's this really good, really meaningful song about just being outside of society and not feeling like you fit in. And he's all like, I'm feeling those lighters.
Oh, yeah. Hey, everybody. And he so just lame. Can't keep his fucking mouth shut.
Yeah, and he doesn't fit at all.
And, like, isn't he married to Jenna Jameson or something?
I don't know.
He's married to a porn star of some sort now. Fuck him. And he's actually now the vice president of Interscope Records or something retarded. How did he pull that one off?
Yeah, I remember he was trying to be a director for a while, but it didn't really work out. He wasn't really a very good director. He directed a corn video that was stupid.
Which corn video did he do?
The first video from that fourth album. What was that called? It's all these kids outside of the house, and they're, like, doing the fist pump, and
I don't know. I
can't remember what it was called.
I don't know. Fred's just... Go back to breakdancing.
That was another weird thing, though, with that band, where it was one of those bands where the guitarist was arguably more famous than the singer, or more popular, with Wes Borland. But once Wes was on his own...
He went straight to hell. Nobody gave a shit about Big Giant Head.
And I tried, even Blacklight Burns, all these things he's been in. I just don't... They're just not that great, you know? They got little moments.
It was definitely the two of them together that made that fucking band what it is.
I really think that whole band... Like, and it's so... I guess it's like... Maybe it's like a guy really trying to defend Poison or something. Like, it probably seems cheeseball to me to defend Limp Bizkit like this, but that whole band, everybody in it was kind of exceptional in some way. Like, Fred Durst was, like, the super front man. Wes Borland was just a crazy art school awesome dude. Their bass player,
voted the year their album came out. John Otto was voted the number one drummer.
Yeah, but like there's all kinds of really cool drum shit, like all kinds.
The bass player is just fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, Sam, like some of their slower amazing. Songs, you know, like Rearranged, or what was that one from the third album that was just like Rearranged, but it was awesome.
I'm sorry, man. The bass on The Truth. What's that song on The Truth? They had a video.
Maybe it was The Truth. I don't know.
Imagine the insults of blessing. Imagine the bass in that song is fucking wrong.
Even just the way they did that album was so cool. It's just them in a big room, and Durst's vocals are really shitty sounding on purpose, like recorded shitty, and it sounds fucking cool as hell. Just so neat. And then who am I missing? And DJ Lethal. I mean, he was famous already.
DJ Lethal.
Yeah, he might not be great.
Whatever. Really, he's a fucking DJ.
Although on. That album, the fourth one, Results May Vary. One of my favorite songs he did, that song Cream, of I Got News For You, fucking, shit, how does that go?
See, I'd have to listen to the whole album again, and I
can't remember anything anymore.
If Dwayne Broderick is listening to this, which he's probably not, I want my copy of Results May Vary back. I remember when I first got that album, though, I would grab random people that I was in PEI when I got it, and just random people that I knew in PEI, I'd be like, I'm gonna put an album in, and you're gonna listen to it, and you're gonna tell me who the band is. And I'd put on Under the Bridge, or I'd
Build the Bridge, yeah, I like that song too.
Build the Bridge, or was it In Front of a Gun, or something with a gun?
Under the Gun, I think.
Under the Gun. And I'd put those songs on, and I'd press play, and they'd get through the song, and I'd hit stop, and I'd be like, who is that? I don't fucking know. It's awesome though. Yeah.
That's like Build a Bridge. The first time I heard that was actually a promo for like SummerSlam for wrestling. And I was like, man, I really like that. What the fuck band is that? And it's like, Limp Bizkit? Really? Holy shit, I should fucking get that album. Or even like the first single, Eat You Alive. I didn't even like it at first, but it ended up growing on me. But
that
when I first heard it, I was like, really?
Well, I bought that. I normally buy albums in twos. I don't know why. I bought that album and I bought, it wasn't Hybrid Theory. One of the fucking Linkin Park albums.
I don't even remember what the second one was called anymore.
It was awesome. It was all black and white.
Yeah. Meteora.
There you go. I bought Meteora. And I just remember that those two albums fucking got me through my whole year in PEI. Because I was allowed to listen to them. I also bought Recipe for Hate because I fucking was like, oh, it's $9, cool. And my girlfriend at the time would not let me listen to it. I would have to like sneak my bad religion in that year.
No, you said fucking bullshit.
No, it's fucking punk, fuck off. It's awesome. All right,
so who's next? Let's play that song. Yeah, so it's some classic Limp Bizkit. Which, if you came after Hot Dog Flavor Water, I mean, I understand why you hate that band, but You're wrong. You're fucking wrong. Actually, keep rolling, 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 rolling.
There's
what?
A dude
keep
I
rolling, 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 rolling. Come on. I can understand why.
Remember I was telling you about the young dude that I work with? He was like talking about how he can't fucking function. He doesn't feel normal unless he's fucking high or drunk. I might have told you about that.
I don't know, but I'm sure I've known people like that. So
his
sure.
favorite album is Hot Dog Flavored Water.
Well, it's the same thing. Keith Lally out in New York. We're always defending Limp Bizkit against... from people, but that's his favorite. He thinks that's their best album.
Is he on fucking glue? Like, did he quit the drugs? Like, I thought he quit the drugs and just drank a lot.
Yeah, so, I don't know. What can I say? And, like, with Hot Dog Flavor Water, it came out real fast after Significant Other, like a year later.
It was shit.
Yeah, and
it's the shittiest album fucking... I don't even think I've managed to listen to the whole album.
It's, yeah, it's got some moments. It's got some good songs. Like, you know, My Way was pretty good, but...
My Way, oh, yeah, that song was actually fucking awesome. I forgot it was on that album.
But overall, yeah, it doesn't hold up. All right, so some fucking pollution.
But I would never understand. But the pollution! But
I
would
never understand. Totally.
I don't know any words to that. Use your vehicle of salvation, my brothers. Go buy a gun. And go give your gun to Jesus and say, Jesus... You go kill the disciples of Satan and you kill the Nazis, Jesus. Give me an amen. Give me a hallelujah, brother.
Hallelujah. Feel the pain of sweet Jesus. Give me another amen. Amen. Give me another. You've got to kill the noise. You've got to kill the pollution of Satan, brother. Give me a hallelujah. Have you been healed? Have you been saved? Has it happened to you, my brother? Thank the Lord. Praise the Lord. Jesus! I love Jesus! Kill the pollution! Pollution!
Come on, fool!
Yeah!
If it has something to do with just something about being the first song on an album buys points with me, because it is weird how many times the first song on an album really sticks with me. It's like, because at this point we're up to 6 or 7 songs and it's
weird. Agreed with any of them.
Yeah. Stone Temple Pilots, their first album, it was just super, super awesome. Man, I loved it. It was, I think, by far the best thing they ever did. They had some moments here and there, but man, it was good.
Here's the funny part about STP. For me, anyway. Do you remember Jamie Bunker?
Yeah, a little bit.
Jamie Bunker comes over to my house one day, because I don't know, I was apparently the music kid in the neighborhood. And he comes over and he's like, dude, have you heard Pearl Jam's new single? And I'm like, no, fuck, Pearl Jam put out a new track. He's like, yeah. I'm like, it's not on 10? He's like, no. And he plays me fucking Plush. And I'm like,
I never understood.
Fuck? That's not Pearl. Pearl Jam.
And I remember they got tons of shit when they first came out for being Pearl Jam derivative, but I didn't think so. I really didn't think they sounded like Pearl Jam. I never understood.
Well, it's just vocally. When they came out, before Scott Weiland fucking started shoving every drug, people either thought he sounded like fucking Lane Stanley or fucking Eddie Vedder. And he could do both, which is really fucking weird because they're two distinct fucking voices and really different. But he managed to fucking pull it off.
The one thing that, years later, did you ever hear that band 7 Mary 3?
I've heard them.
I only know the song Cumbersome, but it was mislabeled as an STP song.
What?
And I was like, but it tricked me at first. I was like, and just online somewhere, and I was like, where is this song from? Like, I kept up on Stone Temple Pilots. I don't know this. And then I figured out it was a different band. And then I was like, oh, yeah, now that I really listened, it doesn't sound like him. But it tricked me at first.
STP has done the same thing. They did the same thing that everyone else on our list did and put out a fucking album that you could listen to from front to back to front, and it was all good fucking album, all good songs. You could not fucking complain at all about that album. Core was fucking awesome.
And I think it was even one of the two brothers that was in the band who said this in an interview, that why he thinks a lot of bands' first albums are the best one is that that's the one you have all the time to craft and work on, and that's what you pitch to a record label and do. Then it's popular, and between touring and everything and all this crazy shit
you
in your life,
you don't have time to fucking create the way you did before.
And when I was in 9th grade, 2 years between albums seemed like a long ass time, but it's not. And when you're grown up or even in your early 20s and you're these guys in the band, it just goes by.
Well, then there's also bands that just shouldn't be allowed to fucking create anymore. Axl Rose, just put down the microphone, dude.
I don't
Chinese
know.
Chinese Democracy fucking sucks.
I think it's better than Velvet Revolver.
Well,
if I had to pick one.
Here's the thing. Axl Rose is, like, for all the bullshit that was said about him, he was a pretty clean living guy compared to fucking all the other rockers right. of the era.
Plus, and I mean, he spent like $13 million making Chinese Democracy, and I didn't pay for it. So it's like, sure, thanks, man. Thanks for the present. I only listened to it I listened to it for about a month.
But, like, Scott Weiland, fucking, I don't know. You could tell something was going on with them between the first and second albums.
Yeah, and their whole second album, like, it was a really good album, but you just could tell it wasn't
Purple or?
Yeah. And,
See, Purple, I didn't.
It wasn't punch in the face great like the first one, and then by the third one, it was really getting dodgy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But he's apparently gone back to STP,
yeah? Yeah, I heard that, because that's the other thing, is Stone Temple Pilots kept trying to move on. Like, they had a band called Talk Show with some no-name singer who, I always think it's a bad idea when you get a replacement singer who sort of sounds like the original, because he sort of sounded like
Scott Weiland,
except just this one little, it's like a parody of him, because he didn't have the range, he just had the one little sliver. And then they had a band called No Man Army, or what was it called?
One Man Army?
It was, Army of No One.
Army of No One?
Or something.
I don't know, see.
And it was the guy from Filter. So I was like, that'd be awesome, man. The guy from Filter with...
with them, and it sucked. Yeah, I do recall reading about that.
Yeah, it was...
never listened to their shit.
But then I guess Stoneable Pilots also kind of sucked by that point, so what do I expect?
Actually, wasn't fucking Hey Man Nice Shot the first Filter track?
It was. But
we're not
going
to go into that.
I think their whole second album was the best. It was way awesome.
See, I don't know. I loved Short Bus. But anyway, back to STP.
I listened to that album Into the Fucking Dirt. But the first song, Dead and Bloated, in some ways, might have been my favorite.
I am smelling like a rose that somebody gave me on my birthday deathbed. I remember that fucking album. I remember when I got it. Mom liked it. I think that was, like, I kept grabbing different types of music to keep my mom from stealing my albums, because she used to do it constantly.
Right.
And I remember I bought that, and I listened to it once, and then it disappeared. And it was because it was in mom's car. She used to pull that shit on me all the time. She stole Green Day. She stole fucking Guns N' Roses. She stole... Mom went to see Green Day. I've never seen Green Day play.
Yeah, I should have gone too. Like, when else is a band like that ever going to play in Fredericton?
Well, they're never allowed to play in Fredericton again due to the nakedness. For those not in the know, they played here in 94?
I think it was 96. Like, it was a little bit after their big peak, but it was still going pretty strong.
Anyway, and they got naked for an encore, and, like, Mom called me that night and was like, guess what I did? What'd you do, Mom? It's 3 in the morning. Is everybody okay? She's like, I saw Green Day, and I asked her how the show was, and she's like, well, it was all good till Billy Joe got naked, and I was like, what? That's not cool. Rockstar showing their things to my mom.
I'm trying to think of just another little story I heard about Stoneable Pilots is how that band formed. Is
see, this is new to me.
There's two brothers in the band. There's, like, the drummer is his own dude, and I think the bass player and the guitar player are brothers, if I remember, and Scott Weiland. Anyway, so one of those brothers and Scott Weiland were dating the same chick, and they ended up meeting each other at a show somewhere and realized what was going on, and instead of fighting about it, they just broke up with that bitch and became friends and started a band.
That's like, sort of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. And it's called STP because... they used to be called Shirley Temple's Pussy, I think. And then they were just trying to come up with other STP things because they couldn't get away with that one legally. And Stoneable Pilots just sounded cool. And they got the STP, I think, from the motor oil.
The
and
motor
they were
oil.
Just like coming up with silly
acronyms.
Who is
the band? There's a friggin' punk band who... Oh, the Crucifix. their name... is the Crucifix wherever they go, but in their hometown they're in a completely different name because they don't want their parents to know what their real name is.
That's awesome.
I can't remember what they call themselves when they're playing their hometown, but it's just funny. I remember hearing that. Who's the other band that fucking had changed it? Lamb of God was originally called Burn the Priest. But yeah, had to fucking...
I've never heard the band. I should look them up. But one of my favorite names that I wish I came up with is Dropkick Me Jesus. I just think that's just cool. I like it.
Oh,
it's not too blasphemous. It's just funny and weird.
Actually, I got Ray on the big kick of... who was the band that we just sat there and looked up song titles for days?
Anal Cunt?
Anal Cunt. Yeah. Ray and I sat there and looked up Anal Cunt Wiki and fucking just giggled for days because of the fucking album title. Like, he's like, there's no way these guys put out these songs. I'm like, yeah, they did. They all suck, but they're all cleverly fucking titled.
You don't want to listen to them, but yeah, like, I snuck a retard into the sperm bank. And
I heard you were pregnant, so I kicked you down the stairs. There's a whole album.
Hitler Was a Sensitive Man.
Hitler Was a Sensitive Man was a goodie. There's a whole fucking album that they base on So-and-So Is a Shit, This Is a Shit, I Am a Shit, and it's all about shit or something. I can't remember exactly how it went, but they did a whole album like that.
I always liked the Vandals had an album called Hitler Bad, Vandals Good. So that was nice.
Oh, fuck. But he was a sensitive man. His real name wasn't Hitler. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
His real name wasn't Adolf Hitler. I can't remember his real name, but he changed it. And he wasn't even German. He was Austrian.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was Austrian. And here's the funny thing. Hitler wanted to create the super race of people. Blonde hair, blue eyes,
like,
and 6 foot you know, and up, and fucking Hitler's like, what, 5'6" maybe? Fucking little weaselly fucking black-haired fucking brown-eyed piece of shit.
And he was a nerd because he based his mustache on Charlie Chaplin.
He was also...
Who does that?
He was also either a quarter or an eighth Jewish. And I have no idea how Stone Temple Pilots led to a discussion on Hitler, but hey!
Yeah, so I guess if we can think of any other bands, we'll be back. But if not, this might finish off the show.
Anyway, go fuck yourselves.
Yeah.